Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 29th of April 2016, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jane Thomas. Now your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are disaster as major store will shut down. Residents voice fears over the future of TIP. Local threat to the housing scheme. So let's have the story behind the first headline. Shirley.
Disaster as a major store will shut down. A major Winchester department store has announced it is closing in August. Beals in the Brooks Centre placed "Closing down, everything must go" notices in the windows of its large two-storey shop last Thursday. The store will shut on August the 1st. It has been the Brooks flagship store and has operated in Winchester since the Brooks opened in 1992. The closure announcement comes only a month after the Bournemouth-based company brokered a deal to cut its rent. The store at Winchester was one of 14 which Beale said would not be viable unless the rent was drastically reduced. Beale's won backing from its creditors for a company voluntary arrangement, a CVA, to stave off going into administration. It told the landlords of the Winchester branch that the rent must be drastically reduced, saying it was one of 14 stores which were unsustainable without reductions. The Winchester staff and manager declined to comment. No one was available for comment at the head office. It was unclear exactly how many Winchester jobs will go, but as well as shop floors selling clothing and household goods, there is also a cafe. Richard Barnes, 51, who works for Hampshire County Council in Winchester, said he was saddened by the announcement. Mr. Barnes said, "I think it's going to kill it. It is one of the biggest shops that brings the names in. I work in Winchester and used to always come down to Beale's and have a wander. It is a shame." The Brooks Shopping Centre was asked about the negotiations over rent, but in a statement said, "We note the closure of Beale's, and although we were aware of the retailer's decision, it is an end to an era locally. We now very much look forward to announcing the plans which we are launching for the scheme and the future occupiers of the centre, which will be unveiled in due course." There was a mixed reaction from the local business community. Catherine Turness, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "Their closure doesn't come as a huge surprise, given the recent correspondence on the CVA. It is always disappointing to hear of a business departing the city, but I see this as a potential opportunity for the Brooks to attract an anchor store to the centres." James Burns, Cabinet Member for Economy at Winchester City Council, said, "It is a blow to Winchester. I would be interested in who decided to stop their operations here. What's important for me is to understand the reasons why and find out if it is something we and our partners could have done anything about." He added the firm had not made any queries or complaints to the council. City Councillor Ian Tate said, "I'm sad it has been the anchor store and has struggled on. I go to the Brooks most days, and the way the building is configured is not the most user-friendly, but in fairness to Beale's, they have played a significant part in maintaining the Brooks as a viable unit. I think it's sad, and it is a blow for Winchester." Beale's, which has 29 stores across the country, was bought last year for just £1.2 million by investor Andrew Perloff.
Okay, it's over to Noel for the second headline story.
Yes, residents voice fears over the future of TIP. Nearly 100 residents gathered to voice their concerns over the potential closure of Alsford TIP. Councillors and residents fear the recycling centre in Prospect Road will close in council cost-cutting. It comes as Hampshire County Council launched a 10-week consultation on the future of centres. Residents gathered at Alsford Recreation Centre in the main hall to hear ideas of what can be done to prevent the closure. Conservative City Councillor Kim Gottlieb was quick to say he wanted the issue to be a cross-party campaign to keep the TIP open. This is despite Conservative councillors at Hampshire County Council being behind the plans to close recycling centres in the county. Concerns over the closure went as far as claims some residents would burn their waste, according to Lib Dem County Councillor Jackie Porter. The meeting heard that the TIP is visited on average 153 times a day. If the TIP closes, residents in Alsford will have to make a 16-mile round trip to Bar End in Winchester, and people fear the closure will increase pollution due to car journeys and increased fly tipping. One resident said keeping the TIP open is paramount to the town. He said, "All of us here, if I may say so, are quite elderly. Why, if we pay the council tax, which most of us are in B and E, why should we suffer more? And what about people who can't get to the TIP? Some elderly may only feel comfortable driving a car 10 miles. Asking people to double the mileage might spook them a bit more." Councillor Porter urged residents to take part in the consultation. After the meeting, she said, "Because the council needs to know the strength of public feeling, they can only really do that if people send in a form which can be sent in by paper and online. And for me, it is about the sort of facility that the public pay for from their council tax." The TIP is currently open 7 days a week, only closing on Christmas Day, Boxing Day and New Year's Day. And the plans could mean that the TIP hours are reduced. Alsford Town Council will be delivering leaflets to every household in the town. These will explain the proposals to close the TIP and how to take part in the consultation. A committee has also been set up to fight the plan. And there's a picture accompanying this of the residents gathered to discuss the future, and they're all sitting there and they all look pretty miserable.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Heather.
Legal threat to housing scheme. More than 160 homes are to be built in Coldon Common after planners gave proposals the green light. Developer Foreman Homes will build 99 houses at the Sandy Fields Nurseries land on Main Road, including an additional 66 affordable homes. However, a rival developer has now questioned the decision and threatened legal action. Richard Cutler, partner at Bloombridge, was shocked that Winchester City Council approved the plans. "It seems that the council is happy to let children walk up Main Road to school and in order to play at Coldon Common Park," said Mr. Cutler. "Overall, this is a very odd decision." He added, "The committee's decision means that the new residents in Coldon Common will be living on the wrong side of Main Road, an unsustainable 1,200 metres from the school and co-op." Legal action has been threatened by developers Welbeck and Bargate Homes, who also have schemes in Coldon Common, and I am considering my options. In response, a spokesman for the City Council said, "The planning committee considered a comprehensive report before reaching its decision on this development in Coldon Common, and the report included objections from other developers." Councillor Richard Izard, who represents the Coldon Common ward, is confident this is the right site to build on, despite 27 objection letters. He said, "During the consultation period, more than 500 villagers came forward with their ideas. What they told us loud and clear was that Sandy Fields was by far and away the best location to use. As this site can accommodate the houses required, it would be a shame if these plans were refused." Councillor Izard added that 50% of the homes could be sold to first-time buyers. "It's the most important development in Coldon Common for the last 20 years," added the Winchester City Councillor. 50% of the site could be offered to first-time buyers already living in the area. A lot of issues have been raised regarding extra traffic on the road, but whatever site we build on would increase traffic. Steve Carrington of Foreman Homes said the firm is still listening to the public as to what they want from the development. "This proposal's been a long time coming," added Mr. Carrington. "We try and say yes to every request we receive. We have not sought to cut any corners. And we are the right people to deliver this long-awaited scheme for family homes."
And that concludes our headline stories. OK, we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, letter from Westminster, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Barker, Sadie Mackay Barker, peacefully aged 70. Bogan, Peter Paul Bogan, former headmaster of St. Peter's Catholic Primary School, aged 95. Cave, Reginald Reg Cave, late of Chandler's Ford and the former postman of Winchester and Durley, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, aged 95. Critchley, Myra Critchley, suddenly at home. Drury, Avril Vera Drury, aged 85, in Winchester Hospital. Ellis, Kenneth George Ken Ellis, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 79. Harper, Nancy Margaret Harper, MBE, founder of the Miss Harper Nursery in St. Cross, aged 83. Hillary, Graham Peter Hillary, after a long illness. Lowe, Kathleen Maud Lowe, peacefully at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 93. Marr, Walter Thomas James Marr, aged 97. Seal, Bertha Barbara Seal. And finally, Whitmarsh, Barbara Phyllis Whitmarsh, in Winchester Hospital, aged 80. So it's on to Christian comment then, please, Shirley.
Yes, and this is written by the Reverend Graham Bulkett. I was walking into Alresford Town Centre last week when, just as I passed the doctor's surgery, a man getting out of an enormous white van shouted at me, "Is there any difference between a newborn Christian and a Christian?" I hoped he wasn't shouting at me, but he was. I wondered if this chap was wanting to engage me in a theological discussion or just being provocative. It turned out he wanted a theological discussion, and he was being provocative. He was endeavouring to be challenging and promoting a number of perspectives, some of which I found quite bellicose. I answered that I felt there was probably not a difference. I explained that I thought a Christian is someone who proclaims himself a follower of Jesus and lives their life according to the set of moral, spiritual, and practical guidelines as enlightened in Holy Scripture. A newborn experience is not a prerequisite of grace. I was accused of ducking the issue, which I had, but life is so short. I'm already 48, and who knows how much longer I might have to live. I was, of course, also completely ignoring any attempt to talk about death to John chapter 3, verses 3 to 5. Nicodemus is told by Jesus, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God unless they are born again." Luckily for me, in Greek, every word has about 8 meanings. So born again might mean born from above. This passage needs some delicate thought. He didn't like my answer. I was accused of completely missing the point and might as well take my clerical car off, as there was, as far as he was concerned, clearly a difference. He continued to outline some of them an ardent apologetic of doctrinal perspectives that undergirded a very exclusive view. He had a lot of opinions, many of them relying on scriptural nuances, which I found hard to follow. But eventually, it basically meant that he was probably the only person on the planet righteous enough to go to heaven. Priests were very low in the list of the righteous, which I said was about the only thing he said which I could agree with. I'm afraid at no point in our discussion did we address the unfathomable delight that God might just inextricably love all humanity and the world. Jesus, the neon flashing light of hope that does not require a degree in theology to understand. Using certain biblical references as battering rams does not make anyone the arbiter of grace. Loving God and loving your neighbour are the only fundamentals one needs to comprehend. That is not to say a little study isn't a good thing. I might try it sometime, but doctrinal battlefields only make casualties. Discussions and expressions of viewpoints in a loving and safe environment without seeking advantage permits questions to develop and growth to take place. To take place in love. After all, we are told, God so loved the world, he sent his only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish. John 3 again, verse 16. Jesus did not come to condemn the world, but rather, and very importantly, to save it. And that was written by Reverend Graham Bowkett, rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice, Area Dean of Oxford.
Well, let's continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. An email may be sent to news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or there's a good old pigeon post, the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. We've got 10 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, this is headlined Help Needed Now, and it's from Tony Wyman. Sir, so Beale's is to close, and yet another shop leaves Winchester. For any trader, the question arises as to whether we continue to put on a brave face on shop closures and issue a calming statement that all will be well, or do we say enough is enough, and there is a systematic problem that has to be fixed? The underlying problem is that no retailer can put up their prices in today's economy, and yet costs keep rising. My own business had an 18% increase in our business rates this year, thanks to Osborne removing a rebate. Our landlord found a way to increase our service charges by 33%. The minimum wage becomes the living wage, and utility bills always increase. The only way you could avoid being squeezed to death is to increase the volume of business. And it is here in Winchester that the City Council is not simply failing to support retail, but is actively working the other way. It's not just on Silver Hill that the council failed to listen to advice. We told them that their car parking policy was a disaster, but they continued on. Friars Gate and Chesil Street have now closed, and Upper Brook Street will soon be follow. Fewer customers are able to get to us. Those that want to are put off. And how can we increase trade when customers are being dissuaded from even coming here? Ditto the High Street Market. With all its natural advantages, I do not believe that it should be a foregone conclusion that Winchester will cease to be a retail centre. But to avoid that fate requires the council and business to work together and for the council to listen to business leaders and to actively support Winchester retail. Time is of the essence. Setting up a committee to report back in a year's time is not what's needed. We need the car parking capacity restored, the street market off the high street, and to find a way to reduce the business rates. And we need that to happen now. Tony Wyman, Childhood's Dream Limited, The Brooks, Winchester.
Other solutions comes from Nick Bell. Sir, I was very concerned to read of the suggestion in your edition of April the 21st that Winchester Bid were considering positioning planters in doorways of shops in Winchester to prevent rough sleepers. It was gratifying, though, to also read of the local opposition to such a suggestion, which would merely drive the problem elsewhere. This proposal focuses on one symptom of the problem, rather than approaching the root cause or attempting to solve it in the long term. So many people I speak to, who are not familiar with the facts, say, well, why don't these people just go to the night shelter? Well, it's not so simple as that. I'm a volunteer at the Winchester Night Shelter. I know only too well that it is permanently full to capacity with a waiting list. There are also issues about an individual's suitability as a resident for the shelter, and alternative options are desperately needed. Winchester Bid would be far better engaging its members in cooperation with the City Council and the present providers of help, such as Trinity and the Night Shelter, in examining ways that the members' money could be better spent on expanding and improving the services which are already there. They do a fantastic job, but how much better it would be if they had the funds to do more. Members of BID could then enhance their own reputation and show their humanity for the benefit of their businesses by being proud of what they've done and telling their customers. A win-win situation. Nick Bell, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
And this one is headed Embrace Motion, and it's written by Phil Yates. Sir, the report in the Chronicle, April 21st, that city councillors at their full meeting on April 13th considered the motion by Councillor Rose Burns for a cross-party group of councillors to oversee major developments over the future of Silver Hill saga as an insult is quite extraordinary. A subcommittee, as suggested by Solicitor Claire Lloyd-Jones in her report, is the right decision, and the councillors who objected to this proposal should be grateful rather than getting so uptight. They should be given the proposal some thought. The subcommittee is saving them time by reviewing a new approach to the scheme. They will still be able to debate the matter at future council meetings on the subcommittee's report. I've been on several committees in the past and have always welcomed a subsection to deal with certain aspects of a project so that the main committee can proceed with other matters. When the subsection reported back to the main committee, we were always grateful for their work and normally rubber-stamped their recommendations. Still, with a new-look council, hopefully, after next week's local elections, a different view may be taken. Too many years have already been wasted on this project. And that was Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Clive Burgess says, too much change. Sir, over the last 20 years, I've been involved in much of the life of Winchester. Theatre Royal, festivals, markets, BID, WINAC, university, and I've had dealings with a number of Winchester City Council's councillors and paid officers, many of whom I admire. However, today, I see worrying signs of a lack of vision and leadership, particularly within the elected council. So it is with some interest that I've been watching the emergence of the Winchester Independents in the lead-up to yet another in the seemingly endless round of elections to Winchester City Council. Like them, I believe that we need to abandon the present system of electing a third of the councillors in 3 out of 4 years and replace it with elections of the whole council once every 4 years. The current system leaves the City Council in a continual state of turmoil. New faces, new manifestos, new alliances. With such a constantly shifting base, how can we expect any party to push forward with change? After all, it might only have 12 months before fresh elections overturns its majority. In such circumstances, I seriously question the council's potential to perform. Those familiar with Tuckman's model of group development, forming, storming, norming, performing, may agree that the council is stuck at stage 2, storming. Meanwhile, the only constant is the council's paid officers, most of whom have been in post for many years. Therefore, is it any wonder that some councillors are in their thrall rather than actually leading them? As our elected representatives, we now need city councillors to put recent machinations behind them and to provide effective leadership and excite us with clear and well-considered vision for the future of Winchester, both the city and district. Seismic change is needed. Winchester independence could well effect that. Clive Burgess, Beeches Hill, Bishop's Waltham.
And Rose Burns, the city councillor, herself writes, "Save our history." Sir, the Ulswither Road dig last weekend was a milestone in demonstrating what can be done to explore our city's history and heritage using the volunteer resources of WARG, residents of Hyde and Hyde 900, of which I am a trustee. It was all about archaeology. We uncovered part of the medieval walls of Hyde Abbey, established in 1110 to house the remains of Alfred the Great, his wife Ulswitha, and son Edward. Underneath the 5-acre Silver Hill site, there apparently lies a whole new area of opportunity for archaeological discovery. Unique in the United Kingdom, in that this underdeveloped city centre site has never before been explored for its archaeology. The Romans, having moved the River Itchen eastwards, cannot have undertaken that exercise for nothing, and the waterlogged, so potentially well-preserved remains of whatever may be down there, baths, temples, theatre, etc., could await revelation. And this is one reason why I am so keen to stop the disastrous Henderson plans for Silver Hill and will also fiercely contest the current ill-considered design plans for development at the station area, where so much of the substratum element will encompass remains from the huge Roman Lank Hill Cemetery. The city's future lies in its history, and the opportunity must not be squandered. Rose Burns, City Councillor for St Bartholomew Ward, Hyde House Gardens, Winchester.
And this is from Tracy Clare Dunlop, headed "We Deserve More." "Sir, I've watched with interest the letters posted on these pages regarding Winchester independence that have written us off as ineffectual. I did not know that as a city we had the UK's only fortune teller with political leanings. As to write us off without ever having spoken to or met 4 out of the 5 candidates is quite a feat. I can and will only speak for myself. That's the great thing about being independent. But even I don't know what type of councillor I'll make, as I've never done it before. What I can say is that in a 20-year career, even in our largest multi-billion pound projects for central or local government, I've never seen a shambles like I've witnessed our council preside over. It is that which has made me jump from a pub politician to putting my head above the parapet and saying, surely we deserve better than this. I grew up in Winchester and, thanks to a scholarship with IBM in Hursley, did a computer science degree, which led to a great career in IT. This has shown me that, with innovative thinking and the use of technology, there are 21st century answers to some of the issues Winchester faces. Congestion, parking, lighting, and even affordable housing. I've worked with councils in the UK and Europe where we've helped them save millions of pounds, which in the time of shrinking budgets is desperately needed. I know I have an uphill struggle to get elected for St Paul's on May the 5th, but I am willing to put myself out there and try. As the Claire Lloyd-Jones report says, we deserve better." And that was from Tracy Clare Dunlop, Winchester Independence of St Paul's Ward, Winchester.
David Selby urges, "Spoil this ballot. Sir, Before the last election, Mr. Cameron made great play about reducing what he called back office staff. By creating police and crime commissioners, he has added about £500,000 in Hampshire alone to the police budget for these back office staff, who would not be missed if they disappeared, and who, it seems, had so little to do that they can now extend their role to cover fire and rescue service. I would urge those who feel like me to spoil their ballot paper for this particular election to show their disdain for a post which is becoming increasingly political, when before we had prided ourselves as a nation that the police force was not the instrument of a political party. We cannot stop this election, but we can demonstrate our opposition to a purely American intrusion that is no more democratic than the police committees of elected representatives that preceded them. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Good fortune in the local elections. Kim Gottlieb writes, "Sir, in what might be my last letter to the Chronicle as a city councillor, I would like to wish all candidates in next week's election well, irrespective of their political persuasion. At the heart of much difficulty within local government is the sad fact that not enough people want to be councillors at district or parish level. For those who do make it over the line, there will be challenges aplenty in the year ahead. Devolution and financial pressures loom large. And as regards major developments, Silver Hill is nowhere near being on the right track. And the equally significant station approach scheme is being lined up to become another debacle. A key challenge would be to make sure that the City Council has the right corporate structure and senior management team. And the urgency of this cannot be underestimated." Kim A. Gottlieb, City Councillor for Itchen Valley Ward, Avington, Alsford.
And this is headed Ridiculous Request, and it's written by Andrew Beadle. "Sir, I was astounded at the suggestion by Judith Martin of Winchester Independence, Chronicle Letters, April 21st, that letter writers to your paper should declare their political affiliation. She's quite correct that I have stood as a Conservative candidate, but as the last time was in 2002, unsuccessfully, I fail to see why I should have declared that 14 years later. For all she knows, my political views may have changed, like hers, apparently, during that time. If she had read my letter carefully, she will have seen that I was not advocating any particular political party. Rather, I was making the point that there are advantages to party candidates and councillors compared with independent ones. I'm full of admiration for anyone who stands as a candidate under whatever banner, but independents cannot expect to criticise others and be exempt themselves. Judith Martin knows what being a councillor involves. I hope she has warned her innocent first-timers that if any are elected, it will not be as easy as they probably now think. Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, Winchester."
And Pat Lawrence is writing about the Alsford Household Waste Recycling Centre, and she's included an awful lot of statistics, so I shall try and read it carefully. "Sir, as you may have heard in last week's Chronicle, there is overwhelming opposition to the Hampshire County Council's plan to reduce the opening hours or close the Alsford Household Waste Recycling Centre. It is appreciated that savings have to be made due to a shortfall in central government funding, but this action is not appropriate. Our main concern is the high probability of increased fly tipping locally, plus the environmental impact caused by the 15-mile round trip to our nearest household waste recycling centre at Bar End. I have obtained figures from Hampshire County Council under the Freedom of Information Act detailing the household waste recycling centre site usage. An average of 153 vehicles use the site per day, 362 days a year. This equates to 55,386 round trips times 15 equals 830,790 miles equals 1,337.26 kilometres times 160 grams carbon per kilometre equals 213,924.160 grams equals 213 metric tons of CO2 into the atmosphere per year. These calculations do not include the queues outside the site at weekends. This surely drives a coach and horses through Hampshire County Council's green credentials. Concern has also been expressed regarding the closed and weighted questions in the Hampshire County Council consultation survey. For example, question 6. Please rank each of the options according to your preference. Close 4 sites, close 8 sites, or close 12 sites. With no option to close no sites. So, when the number crunching is done, it could be deduced by Hampshire County Council that 100% of respondents agree to Alsford being closed. Alsford is one of the smallest and most expensive of the 26 sites in Hampshire to operate. As there is limited opportunity to express your concern on the online consultation, hants.gov.uk/HWRC2016, it is strongly recommended to complete the paper copy by calling 0300 555 1389. I'll say that again. 0300 555 1389. The closing date is midday on May the 25th. Household waste recycling centres are not a luxury but an essential amenity to modern day living. Consideration should be made to expanding this facility to accommodate the 300 new dwellings planned for Alsford and providing facilities for trade waste, thereby supporting local businesses. That's Pat Lawrence, Cheriton.
And on that letter, we'll finish all of the letters for this week. Many thanks to all of our contributors. And yes, it's time for your say. After the first full NHS walkout by junior doctors, we asked whether people still support their industrial action. Heather, you've got their answers.
Stephen Silk, aged 21, a musician from Exton, said, "Everyone has a right to stand up for themselves and what they believe in. If they are going on strike to benefit us, that's a valid reason for it." And Sam Weeks, 24, a musician of Garfield Road, Bishop's Waltham, said, "I do not think they get paid enough for what they do. Maybe it's a good thing they're on strike." And Stephen Ardrey, aged 57, part director of a shop in King's Walk, Winchester, said, "I think there is something behind the strike, because Britain is supposed to be famous for its National Health Service, and they are trying to protect it." And Mark Stokes, aged 54, owner of Winchester Photographic in St George's Street, said, "I am in full support. I guess the only thing is that they are a body of people that can freely strike, and people like me do not have the same rule."
Now we're going back through the mists of time for our historical news items. So the first of our dusty files is opened by Shirley, 25 years ago.
Yes, right. 25 years ago, April 26th, 1991, and this is in two parts. Hampshire Police came a stage nearer getting a new multi-million pound computer network system this week when the county's Policy and Resources Committee recommended approval for tenders for the first phase of the project. PolNet, short for Police Network, will cost more than £10 million over the next 5 years, and when completed will consist of 800 terminals, 170 printers, 30 computer processors and a communications network linking it to police stations throughout Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Every terminal would provide access for police and civilian staff to a variety of software applications, which were being specially developed for the Hampshire Force. And the second part of this is actually headed Roby Jug Sold. George Roby, the comedian, was the subject of a Royal Doulton 10-inch character jug, which sold for £920 at Stride's Chichester auction. Unconsidered by the auctioneers, the vendor and many bidders, the jug was expected to make just £100. In fact, the main interest has been that George Robey's widow lived up until her death a couple of years ago at nearby picturesque Bosham. From the opposite pole of collecting ceramics, £920 was also the hammer price of a Chelsea Red Anchor oval 15-inch disc dish, decorated leaves in relief.
Let's go back 50 years ago now, please, Noel.
Yes, two items from April the 30th, 1966. The first is called Back in Time. 14-year-old Stephen Cleave of Forrester Road, Soberton, threw a stone and found himself looking back at the beginnings of time. The stone, which he had picked up while walking at Farley Mount near Winchester on Easter Monday, split in half when it fell and revealed a perfect fossil. Stephen took his find to the Cumberland House Museum in Portsmouth and was amazed to learn that the fossil was of a 120 million-year-old sponge. The museum staff pronounced it a very good specimen and told Stephen they would be very glad to have it. At home in Soberton, Stephen was not yet made up his mind whether to hand over the fossil to be a museum piece or perhaps make it the nucleus of a collection of his own. And the second item is headed Catholic Meeting. Speaking at St Peter's Roman Catholic Parish Social Evening in Winchester Guildhall on Thursday, Mr Fred Welsh said the Vatican Council, without relinquishing a single fundamental truth, has given the laity more commitment and responsibility, and added, "Gone is the day when we could sit back and leave it all to the parish priest." This was reiterated by the parish priest, Monsignor S.J. Malarkey, who said it was only right the laity should be concerned with the financial affairs.
Let's go back to 100 years now, please, Heather.
On April the 29th, 1916, there was a regretful drunk. Winchester City Bench. William Frederick Newry, described as an engineer of Egbert Road, was charged with being found drunk in Jury Street on the eve of Good Friday and pleaded guilty, at the same time expressing his sorrow. Police Constable Inge said that at 10:25 p.m. on Thursday evening, he saw defendant in charge of a military policeman. Witness went to him and saw that he was quite incapable of taking care of himself. Defendant told the bench that it was his first lapse, and he would see to it that it did not occur again, and the bench dismissed the case upon payment of 4 shillings costs. Letter from India. The Mian Valley Boys. One of these writes home from India to say that they bought a monkey for 8p, 8 annas. But one day, alas, that monkey got into the doctor's shop, opened the pill boxes, drank some of the medicines, tore up the cotton wool and made a nest of it, broke a case of instruments and did damage amounting to £7, which ended poor Jacko's career. The writer says, "You should hear the shout that goes up when the English mail comes in with the Hampshire paper and the letters from home."
And finally, Shirley is going to take us back 200 years for some more news items.
Yes, this is in two parts again, dated April 29th, 1816. This one is headed, first of all, Murderous Poachers. Winchester. The general quarter sessions of the peace for this county commenced on Monday last before James Burrough, Esquire, Chairman. He called the attention of the magistrates to the alarming extent to which the practice of poaching had been carried. It was a subject for their most serious consideration. The dissolute individuals engaged in this practice had now become so desperate that they had not stopped short of murder. He alluded to the recent case of Colonel Barclay's gamekeeper, who, in endeavouring to protect his master's property from the ravages of these midnight plunderers, fell a sacrifice to their lawless rapacity. And the next part of this is headed Love-Struck Suicide. London. On Sunday night, about 11 o'clock, Francis Cooper, a traveller for a house in Manchester and son to a respectable farmer near Malton, fell a most lamentable victim to suicide. This young man was about 22 years of age and had for some time past paid his addresses to a Miss Cooper, daughter to a landlady at Thornton, who, it appears, had wrote to him in Manchester a few days before, desiring that he would not persist in his addresses. He was found dead, having shot himself in the head in front of the young lady's house. Coroner's verdict, lunacy.
Right, we're back to the present again, and Noel is going to read an alternative look at the news, because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, and I've got two items in Belgarum Diary. The first one is headlined, Rusky Threat on the Wall. A Winchester woman has received a gift with a difference from her husband, a clock from a Russian nuclear submarine. That also happens to be emitting dangerously high levels of radiation. Mark Radon bought his wife Ali the £250 vintage piece for the kitchen wall of their Winchester home. It was only when a friend who served in the Royal Navy asked whether its radioactivity levels had been checked that the family realised there was a danger. Ali, 46, a former Chronicle reporter, now specialising in naval issues, told a national newspaper, "I didn't anticipate a Russian threat hanging in plain sight next to the kettle. We were chatting and my friend suddenly asked if I'd checked to see if the clock was radioactive. I could tell that he was serious and, given the gravity of his previous role, decided to buy a Geiger counter sharpish. The Royal Navy have always been so obsessive about safety. Whenever I've been on one of their submarines with a group of engineers constantly monitoring the reactor, I suppose I assumed the Russians would be the same. Short-term exposure to radiation like this isn't dangerous, but the clock sitting in our kitchen for a decade would have raised our risk of cancer significantly. The radiation levels were similar to a hospital CT scan and dangerous with long-term exposure. It has now been banished to the shed at the bottom of the garden. It is thought the clock had been on board a 1980s Cold War era hunter-killer or Typhoon-class submarine with a leaky nuclear reactor. The Radens plan to return it to the dealer it was bought from in Devon." And the second piece is headlined, "Here's a tip, clear it up." Not a pretty sight, so says Jerry Tuff in an email to Belgarum. It's a tale of the Hampshire countryside with fly tipping a chronic problem. Mrs. Tuff writes, "About 3 weeks ago, we saw this rubbish in the Monument car park on Farley Mount. When we returned home, I spent a fruitless and frustrating 30 to 45 minutes trying to contact someone at Hampshire County Council about it, as the area is plastered with proud HCC signs. I was passed from one department to another. No one seemed to want to take any responsibility for it, or even to know where I was talking about. Clearly not local people. They did suggest that perhaps it was the responsibility of Sparsholt Parish Council, but beyond that weren't able to offer any useful contacts. On April the 24th, we were up there again, and the rubbish was still there. There are concerns that the County Council's proposals to cut the numbers of recycling centres will see more such dumping, and there are two pictures. The first, dumped at Farley Mount Country Park, is a grotesque amount of rubbish on the ground, and then there for 3 weeks, the photograph later, the same rubbish pile is still there.
Now, the personal view this week has been written by Joanna Lewis, and Heather's going to read it right now.
Salute the campaigners. I've not been well. Like many people I know, I've had this lingering virus that seems to last for months. Then last week I hit my head on the roof of my convertible as I bounced off a giant pothole. The last time I dodged such a large crater in a main road, I was driving through the back streets of Lusaka. Now it seems I can recreate the same third world experience en route to Stockbridge. Lovely. I thought I was recovering, but then I got a message about my telephone call to a well-known mustachioed directory inquiry service. It had lasted just over 1 minute, mostly because I couldn't decipher what the woman said on the other end. Yet that single call cost so much, my telephone provider put a bar on my account. Their system had detected possible illegal activity on the line, too bloomin' right. These companies charge an initial fee, a time fee, and then your own phone supplier has a connection fee slapped on top. Is this what it was like living in Zaire in the 1970s under Mobutu? Do not use them, dear reader. In one case, a woman rang up using her mobile phone. She held on till she was connected and got stung for £139, the most expensive pizza delivery in history. Is this Britain? Is it legal, you ask? And then you look around and realise it is. Switch on the television and there are disgracefully deceitful adverts from payday loan companies depicting successful young, thin people arranging loans over the phone and then going on to become even more successful, younger and thinner, for goodness sakes. Either ban them or make them show the reality of their three-figure interest rates: poverty, repossession and elasticated trousers. And then there are our wonderful high street banks, God bless them, clinging on to their monopoly of the current account system with podgy fingers, sweating over how to spend their fat cat profits. I don't know about you, but sometimes I get a terrible feeling about the world we live in, that there's a new, vicious, more uncaring underside to our moral economy, wealth and civilised society. That instead of progress towards greater freedom, fairness and equality, we have darker forms of corruption and money-making spreading to maximise profits from a shrinking economy. Do we still have the institutional frameworks, financial resources and social capital to protect the weak from the powerful? Then suddenly faith in human nature is restored. Take our prospective local councillors working insanely hard for the May the 5th elections. Serving as a councillor is a mammoth commitment. Forget lazy evenings, long weekends or anonymous late-night sorties to the co-op for a can of squirty fresh cream and baby oil. No, council work exposes you to derision, to trolling, to the pressures of making big, difficult decisions. And hardest of all, you have to work with senior council officials, seasoned political operators, some of whom, as we've seen from the Silver Hill fiasco, will lead you up the garden path. So let's salute the campaigners and helpers across all parties, the foot soldiers licking envelopes and distributing leaflets. It's much more time-consuming and hazardous than you'd think. I offered to help in my neighbourhood. I was chased by a dog and jammed my fingers in a metal postbox. Exhausted, I staggered home, needing a bag of Maltesers to recover. I'd only done four houses. What's so restorative and exciting is the injection of new ideas and pledges into public debates with the inauguration of the new party, the Independents. They've risen out of the post-Silver Hill expose of all that's wrong with planning and governance in this glorious town. Their vision is simple. Winchester residents should decide what happens in Winchester, not bureaucrats, not political party dogma, not secret cabinet meetings, not dodgy developers. Bring it on.
Noel's now going to read Steve Bryan's letter from Westminster.
Yes. I was in the House of Commons even earlier than usual on Budget Day. MPs meet over breakfast in the members' tea room to digest the newspapers and discuss what the Chancellor might pull from his hat. One budget surprise that was nothing of the sort, of course, was the plan to see all state schools become academies. It was all over the media that morning, but I knew right away this would cause a great deal of interest back home, so had emailed and had a response from a number of our secondary heads before breakfast was through. Some 85% of schools in Hampshire are already good or outstanding. That figure rises to 94% in the Winchester district. So it would be very strange if I didn't question any proposed change. Head teachers tell me they get a first-rate service from the County Council, which would, in part at least, explain why so few schools have chosen to become academies so far. They also tell me that partnership working across the area among secondary, primary, Church of England and non-Church of England schools is better than it's been for years, and I agree that must be protected. There is widespread confusion in our area as to what is broken here that needs fixing by such a radical prescription, and that phrase clearly caught the mood. I am, however, acutely aware that we could be in danger of we're all right, Jack mentality. Surely children in Lancashire deserve the same standard of education and the same life chances as children in Hampshire, so the government is right to demand educational excellence everywhere. That is why I also urged ministers not to let the bad be the enemy of the good. We do need things to change where schools are failing young people, for their sakes and that of our economy longer term. But we should not do that by a one-size-fits-all that damages what is already working, and the government understands that. I met one-to-one with the Secretary of State, Nicky Morgan, last week, and we're in daily contact. I've been clear in communicating the views from constituency heads and challenging her to clarify the future of small rural settings as well as special schools such as Shepherd's Down. Ultimately, any change needs to find a way whereby high-performing councils such as Hampshire can carry on delivering the services and support schools here clearly value while undergoing the kind of scrutiny that will make them even better and weed out any complacency. All of this remains the focus of discussions I am having with Hampshire, the diocese, who are a key player in this regardless of what the government does next, the university, and teachers and ministers.
Over to you, Shirley, for the editorial comment.
Right, and this one is headed, "People still want the hands-on experience." So Beals in the Brooks has announced it will close on August the 1st. It is not a shock because the store has been limping along for years, a far cry from the acclaim when Beals was announced as the anchor store for the new centre back in the early 1990s. Should we be worried that its closure is a portent of dark times? The answer will be clearer in about 6 months. Will the new store, or perhaps two if the two-storey unit is divided, be open and thriving, or will it be empty? If the former, then well and good, Winchester bounces back. But even if the latter, then there is no need to panic. There are some people who foresee the end of all traditional shopping as the internet takes over. The high street with tumbleweed blowing through the wasteland. Nonsense, of course, especially in Winchester, where most empty units are snapped up quickly. That shopping is going through a painful revolution is obvious, but people still want that hands-on social experience. Just as 20,000 people a week enjoy reading this newspaper on newsprint. What really needs to change is the expectations of landlords and their shareholders in seeking to maximise the rents they charge and the profits they accrue. The High Street and the Brooks can still thrive, but only if the people who provide the buildings are realistic about what returns they can make.
Now it's time for What's On for the week beginning Monday the 2nd of May. Well, on Tuesday, May the 3rd, there's a lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Students from Peter Simmons College will be doing this. It's free with a retiring collection. On Saturday, May the 7th, the Cathedral Chamber Choir concert, again at the Winchester Cathedral. It's at 7:30 p.m. and it's Cathedral Chamber Choir and Southern Sinfonia perform works by J.S. Bach, Purcell and Schutz. And on Saturday, May the 7th, again, Winchester and County Music Festival is at Romsey Abbey. It's at 7:30 p.m. There's Mozart Vesperi Solemnis, the Confessore, and it's K339. And Mozart Requiem. Reserved seats, £22, £16 for concessionaries. Unreserved seats are £12 from Romsey Tourist Office, 01794 512 987. And at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, on Sunday, May the 1st, at 7 p.m, probably a bit late for that now. That's something else, sorry. Shakespeare at the Tobacco Factory is at the Theatre Royal Winchester. And it's Hamlet, Tuesday to Saturday, May the 3rd to the 7th. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday and Saturdays at 7:30. Thursday, there's a matinee at 1:30 p.m. At the Theatre Royal Winchester again, on 12th to 14th of May, Sasha Regan's all-male HMS Pinafore by Gilbert and Sullivan. That looks quite interesting. It's obviously in modern day dress. You can book on 01962 840 440 or book online at theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And at the Nuffield Theatre, 3rd to the 7th of May, there's Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, adapted by Patrick Barlow, which is supposed to be hilarious, says the Sunday Express. You can book now on 023 8067 1771, or you can do it online at nuffieldtheatre.co.uk. On Sunday, the 15th of May, there's the Alsford Watercress Festival, starting at 10:30 a.m. On Wednesday, the 18th, to Saturday, the 21st of May, we're in the next month now. Theatre Royal Winchester, 7:30. Also, Saturday matinee, 2:30 p.m, A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it's by Winchester Musicals and Operatic Society. Telephone number to book, 01962 840 440. Monday the 16th of May, at the Cathedral Undercroft at 3 p.m, Tea at 3, A Chance to Meet Friends and Talk. It'll cost £2.50. Saturday the 21st of May, Cathedral in Winchester, 7:30 p.m. Elgar's The Music Makers. It's a concert, and the details are 01962 857 200. Saturday the 21st of May to Saturday the 28th of May at the Chesil Theatre at 7:40 p.m. with a Saturday matinee at 2:30 p.m. There's Amy's View. Tickets are £13, box office 01962 471 539. Wednesday the 25th of May, Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m. It's Alex Jones in concert. I wonder if that's Aled Jones. Oh well, tickets are £35, or they can go down as low as £19.50. For more details, 01962 857 275. And a little reminder that OpenSight, Hampshire's principal organisation for visually impaired people, is always available for help and advice on 023 8064 1244. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 29th of April at 5:42 a.m. and it begins at 8:24 p.m. And on Wednesday the 4th of May, you can see that the sun's coming up quite fast now, 5:32 a.m. the sun, the lighting up time finishes, and it begins at 8:33 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try chugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We're going on to the items of general news again, starting with one read by Noel.
Yes, this is, of course, the Queen's 90th celebrations. The county was awash with red, white and blue as Her Majesty the Queen's 90th birthday was celebrated last week. Well-wishers donned crowns and decorated their buildings with bunting and flags to celebrate the day. Schoolchildren also got into the party spirit, including at Hiltonbury Infant School in Chandler's Ford, where Year R pupils enjoyed maypole dancing and a tea party. As part of the celebrations, 1,000 beacons were lit throughout the United Kingdom and overseas. At the Grange near Alresford, more than 250 people gathered to sing Happy Birthday. This was followed by the lighting of a beacon and a rendition of God Save the Queen. In Winchester, 400 patrons attended another event to wish the monarch good tidings. Also at the event were King Alfred singers, who were made up of students and staff from the University of Winchester. The beacon was lit by Dame Mary Fagan, the former Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, who used a remote to start a flame. Elsewhere in the county, a beacon lighting event was held in Bishop's Waltham. The evening, held at Priory Park, included food, drink, live music and a special 90th birthday cake. And there are lots of pictures. There's a picture of the infant school children all gazing at the camera, all wearing crowns and all wearing red, white and blue. And there's a picture of Professor Joy Carter from the university and Mary Fagan at West Downs and crowds gathering at West Downs. And then the Grange lit up at Northington near Alresford with flags of red, white and blue and lots of lights. And it's very joyful.
A changed landscape. Hopes of a better turnout as challenges alter for the next police and crime commissioner. Power to the people. That was the idea. Police and crime commissioners have been a hugely important and controversial part of Britain's crime-fighting force for the last 3.5 years. The £85,000 a year officials are directly elected to hold the service to account, and this time next week, Hampshire will return to the polls to elect its next man for the job. So how has county policing changed under the scheme, and how will our elected chief's role change in the future? The landscape was very different in 2012, when Hampshire elected its first police and crime commissioner, independent Simon Hayes. There were hundreds more offices and hundreds more staff and more buildings to put them in. But by 2017, Hampshire will have lost 1,000 police officers in 7 years. But £80 million cuts and fewer bobbies on the beat have not led to rising crimes across the board. Although Hampshire Constabulary's caseload rose by 26% in 2014-15, the most of any force. Much of this was driven by increased reporting of public order issues and sex offences, including historical abuse. There were 13,240 incidents reported in Hampshire in November 2012, when Simon Hayes was elected, with an average of 13,080 each month so far in 2016. Increased violence is a major concern, and there's also been a marked rise in rural crime, where Hampshire is one of the worst hit areas of the country. Off the streets, cybercrime has been set as a national priority, and more police resources are being swallowed to fight identity theft and online scams. It was in Hampshire earlier this year that Home Secretary Theresa May announced that new laws would allow chief constables to fight digital crime through finance and IT experts, albeit as volunteers. Commissioners would control how their skills are used, with Mr. Hayes already having a £1.5 million pot to play with. His £85,000 a year role carries many other responsibilities, from hiring and firing chief constables to setting priorities and deciding the future of police stations. But their public mandate has been repeatedly questioned since the first set of elections. Just 211,000 people voted in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight last time. That's less than 15% of the electorate. A better turnout is expected this time, as the poll coincides with local council elections. But some will see this as a referendum on the role itself. Three of Hampshire's seven candidates have publicly backed scrapping the office they are running for, opting to hand back power to old-school police authorities and the county's new chief constable, Olivia Pinckney. They have a fight on their hands, and in years to come, the Police and Crime Commissioner's role could expand dramatically. The Policing and Crime Bill currently going through Parliament could give commissioners control of fire and rescue services. The Fire Brigades Union is hotly contesting the idea, describing it as a hostile takeover which could invite more cuts from Westminster. But the government is not stopping there. After the election, Ms May is expected to announce further expansion of the Commissioner's role to include youth justice, probation and court services. They could even set up free schools for troubled children. It is unclear when these radical changes would come into force or whether they would force fresh elections. But it is unlikely the commissioners' posts we're electing will stay the same for long. Setting out her stall in February, Ms May said, "We have yet to decide the full extent of these proposals and the form they will take. But I am clear that there is significant opportunity here for police and crime commissioners to lead the same type of reform they have delivered in emergency services in the wider criminal justice system. It is not impossible that one of these men will be responsible, not just for policing, but the other vital services which keep Hampshire safe. And the Hampshire Chronicle urges all readers to vote and vote wisely."
And this one is headed, "TV Stars at Fashion Show for Charity." It was all glitz and glamour at the Grange Mansion on Thursday as thousands of pounds was raised for a worthy cause. As part of their 25th anniversary celebrations, Alresford Moda Rosa Boutique put on a charity fashion show at the Grange at Northington, the first to be held there. More than 250 people were joined by star names, including TV newsreaders Sally Taylor and Alastair Stewart, and actress Sarah Parrish, to help raise £30,000 for the Wessex Haven. The Breast Cancer Support Centre in Titchfield looks after women, men and their families following a cancer diagnosis. They offer exercise classes, supportive therapy and counselling to help people cope with the exhausting effects of the chemotherapy treatment. It costs the centre £1,000 per visitor, and Sally Hillier of Wessex Haven said the money will do immense things. "If we hit the target set by Rosie, it will be incredible," admitted Sally. "As a charity, we can do immense things with that sort of money. We will be able to help a lot of people, and that will be just amazing." Dubbed Hampshire's most exclusive designer boutique, Moda Rosa attracts many famous customers, notably providing outfits for the Duchess of Cambridge, then Kate Middleton, and several members of her family for the royal wedding. Owner Rosie Wild said, "All the proceeds and much more will go to Wessex Haven. Our target is £30,000, but I know we can do so much more." Models descended the home's elegant staircase, showcasing the latest trends, from summer wear and evening gowns to party dresses and ascot-styled hats. Actress Sarah Parrish from Alresford said, "I'm glad I could be a part of such a wonderful evening with beautiful clothes and models. Let's hope the proceeds from the night surpass the target set by Rosie." Sally Taylor, ambassador for the Haven, said she was overwhelmed by the support for the Titchfield Centre.
EU students provide £420 million boost. EU students in the South East contribute £420 million to the local economy, according to analysis by Universities UK. Pro-EU politicians have seized on the findings as proof of the union's importance to young people. Students studying at universities, including Winchester, contributed £169 million through spending on campus and £251 million on outside services like food and rent, the study suggests. The findings showed the region's EU students were more productive than any other outside London, including the whole of Scotland. Universities UK said the spending supported 4,021 jobs in the region. No figures were available for Hampshire alone. Keith Taylor, Green MEP for the South East, said, "While EU students are being denied a vote in the upcoming referendum, this analysis is a timely reminder of just how critical the EU is for young people." Richard Ashworth, Conservative MEP, added, "These figures are an important reminder of the positive impact EU students have on our economy in the South East. Not only do EU students make valuable cultural contributions to local communities, they also spend money and create jobs across our region." Meanwhile, Lib Dem MEP Catherine Bearder has urged students to take advantage of EU exchange programmes. Some 2,217 students at Hampshire universities have used EU grants to study overseas since 2007, according to the British Council.
School football team's shiny new shirts. And there's a photograph of some young boys and some older people, and they're wearing shirts given to them by a local firm. A Winchester special school football team will be kitted up in style. Osborne School has been given the new kit by Integra, an IT firm in the south, and the kit will be worn by the Key Stage 3 and 4 boys team. Deputy head teacher and head of PE at Osborne School, Mark Bernard, said, "The team are so proud of their new kit. Their old kit had seen better days, and with the county finals looming, it was so brilliant that Integra could provide the kit in time for them to wear it." He added, "It's the first time the team have qualified for the finals, and it certainly helped to boost their confidence on the day, especially as we played 5, won 5, and were the Key Stage 4 county champions. We can't thank them enough, and we shall be keeping everyone at Integra updated with our progress on the football pitch in the months ahead," added Mr. Bernard. Integra Chief Executive Andy Jeffries said, "Playing an active role in our community is important to us at Integra. So supporting the children and their impressive talent in football was an easy decision for us to take. We will be taking a keen interest in their future matches and were thrilled at how well they played at the recent county finals." Osborne School caters for pupils with learning difficulties who are aged between 11 and 19. The school in Andover Road has a residential unit of 10 places for pupils aged 16 and over. The school has 16 classes in the main school and 2 post-16 classes which are housed in the residential unit. And on its last Ofsted inspection in 2015, it achieved good with outstanding features. And one of them must surely be its football team.
Call to residents to help group by Sleeping Rough. Winchester residents are being urged to take away their creature comforts and spend a night sleeping rough for charity. Organisers of this year's Big Sleep Out are urging residents and businesses to take part in the event on May the 6th to raise money to support the work of homeless charity Trinity. Trinity Winchester supports more than 800 people a year who are homeless or vulnerable. A recent example of Trinity's life-changing work was with an account manager at a leading IT firm. His life fell apart when he lost his job. His brother was diagnosed with cancer. His friend died in a car accident, and his wife left him. Suddenly, he became homeless and had a nervous breakdown. While Sleeping Rough, He made several suicide attempts until he was eventually sectioned under the Mental Health Act. Once discharged, he went to Trinity to get help and access their services. The man, who has not been named, started dual diagnosis counselling, volunteered in the kitchen, and made use of the advice services and healthcare. He has since moved into supported accommodation and is now looking to use his experiences and retrain as a mental health practitioner. He said, "There is nowhere else where you can get everything you need in one place. Without Trinity, I dread to think where I might be now." Osborne Property Services are one of the long-term supporters of Trinity and work with the charity to provide interview skills training for clients to help them find work. Neil Allison and a team from Osborne will be taking part in this year's Big Sleep Out. Mr. Allison said, "Last year's event was a huge success. It was a great team-building exercise, and the whole experience of sleeping out made us all focus on the terrible challenges facing rough sleepers. It will take place at the Inner Close from 7 p.m. onwards. It costs £10 to take part, and everyone is asked to raise £100.
I have to warn you, this is quite an unpleasant story about child abuse. Its headline is, "Pervert is jailed for sex crime." An artist sexually assaulted a young girl and later confessed to her, "I'm just a paedophile." David Richards from South Wanston abused the child while she was consumed with sorrow over a family tragedy, a judge heard. While comforting the 9-year-old, he molested her, the court was told. Richards, 67, was jailed for 3.5 years when he appeared for sentence at Guildford Crown Court. Judge Stephen Climey told him, "You were with a vulnerable young child and you abused that trust to an extreme degree." He had been found guilty of 3 offences of indecent assault after a trial, although the jury cleared him of an allegation of gross indecency and were discharged after failing to reach verdicts on 5 other counts of indecent assault. The prosecution claimed that the sexual abuse had gone on for a period of 3 years, from 1989 to 1992, when the victim was aged between 6 and 9 years. However, Judge Climey said that because of the jury's verdict, he had to sentence the defendant on the basis that the offences were committed on a single occasion in 1992. Gabby Henty, prosecuting, said that Richards of West Hill Road North, South Wanston, had assaulted the child when she was aged about 9 years. 2 decades later, in 2012, said Ms. Henty, the victim, aged 32, reported the matter to the police. In the intervening years, Richards had kept in touch with the victim, giving her financial help and even buying her a car, which the prosecution claimed was designed to make amends and buy her silence. He was frightened that she would spill the beans, said Ms. Henty. The prosecutor said that 14 years ago, in 2002, the victim had visited Richards at home to find him sunbathing naked in his garden. That was when she flipped, Ms. Henty told the court. She said the victim confronted Richards about the past abuse she had suffered at his hands, only to be told, "I'm just a paedophile." The defendant, who denied all the allegations, said, "None of this happened. It's complete rubbish." Character witnesses at the trial included Stuart Shilson, who was Assistant Private Secretary to the Queen from 2001 to 2004 and is now Director of Management at consultants McKinsey & Co. Father of 3, Mr. Shilson, from Godalming, Surrey, said he was happy for his own children to be with Richards. "I've never had any concerns about him, and I am a very protective father. I've never had any doubts about David, even since I heard about the allegations," he said. Mr. Shilson's mother, Gillian Shilson, a writer, who has been Richard's girlfriend after meeting him while they were both students at the University of Creative Arts in Fareham, Surrey, also said she had never had any suspicions either. Adrienne Knight, defending, said her client was of previous good behaviour, but had the sexual abuse allegations hanging over him for nearly 4 years. As a result, said Ms. Knight, Richards had lost contact with his two sons. Richard was placed on the sex offenders register for an indefinite period.
More should be done to enforce the 20-mile-an-hour cap. Residents in Winchester told police more should be done to impose 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in the city. At a police liaison meeting, concerned pedestrians and motorists told how drivers regularly break the limit on certain roads in the city. As reported in the Chronicle, the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit was introduced last year, but police admitted that they do not enforce the zones. One older female resident who addressed police community officers at a meeting at St Peter's Church in Jury Street said, "Can't you get rid of the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit? You get 20 miles an hour and other people go at 70, and there's a poor pedestrian crossing the road." She said she sees scores of motorists driving along North Wells above the limit. In January, police enforced the limit in the road with speed traps by the former police station. Police community officers said at the meeting that they can only take enforcement action in the city if residents call them about people speeding. They said even though they might not be able to prosecute anyone on limited information, they could start to see a pattern which could lead to future action. They said that traffic speeding is not their remit as community officers, and the most likely way someone would be caught is if a PC in the area or on the road sees a car speeding and stops it. City Councillor Ian Tate, who represents the St Michael ward, believes there are too many drivers speeding on certain roads in the city. "I wonder if 20 miles an hour speed limits are obscuring our focus on people who drive at excessive speed at 40 or 45 miles an hour in residential areas," said Councillor Tate. "I think that's why we should be looking out for the people who are going much too fast, rather than the drivers who are going above 20 miles and below 30. We're preoccupied with 20 miles an hour speed limits when we should be looking at irresponsible drivers who are driving much too fast for the road and conditions. The 20 mile an hour zones were introduced in October 2014, but they proved controversial when police revealed that they were not enforcing the new speeds. The issue caused confusion among the public, so councillors started to label it as pointless.
Addict jailed for assault. A Winchester man addicted to legal highs who attacked a man for no reason is starting a 12-month prison sentence. Mitchell Standen, 23, admitted punching Leon Watkins, someone he had persistently bullied, as he passed him in Whale Street, Winnall, a court heard. Winchester Crown Court heard that Standen, with 20 convictions for 25 offences since 2008, had just bought the legal high spice from Head High Shop on Stockbridge Road. Audrey Archer, mitigating, said Standen of Wolford Close, Stanmore, was addicted to them and they made him aggressive. When under the influence of legal highs, he finds it very difficult to control his emotions and he very much wishes to obtain help. When he came across Mr. Watkins, he vented his anger on him. He accepts that is wrong and is sorry for having done so. Miss Archer said Standen started smoking cannabis when he was 14 and had since become addicted to legal highs. Sentencing Judge Keith Cutler, the recorder of Winchester, said, "I don't know what it is between you and Leon Watkins, but you and your friends make his life a real misery. He writes to me, 'I'm a very passive, timid, non-violent, but always been targeted and bullied person since school.'" The judge said Standen had been given chance after chance, but "Look at you, you're a complete mess, sitting there feeling sorry for yourself. You have taken this court for a ride. I have no alternative to imposing a custodial sentence." The judge jailed Standen for 12 months, minus 12 days for time he had spent on curfew.
a quackers race. Villagers will come together for an annual duck race as part of a fun day. The event in Easton on May the 15th will raise money for the churches of the Itchen Valley. Racing starts at midday on the river below the old rectory in Church Lane beyond Easton School Field. Following on is a barbecue, family games, face painting, a knobbly knees and slender ankles contest, and a bar. You can buy a duck in advance from a number of local venues or church wardens, or on the day. For barbecue tickets, call 01962 779033 or email olddairy2@gmail.com. It costs £10 for adults and £5 for children.
And I'm afraid that that concludes the extracts for the week ending 29th of April 2016. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick reparation teams. And thanks to our readers today, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the address label on the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.